My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine. My fellow plebs, today's podcast is also brought to you by Moon Mortgage. As the world moves increasingly towards the mainstream adoption of Bitcoin and other digital assets, Moon Mortgage makes it possible to materialize your assets into real estate. Through the collateralization of mortgages with Bitcoin and other digital assets, Moon Mortgage will be launching lending solutions to allow investors to easily leverage their assets to purchase investments in owner-occupied property. Moon Mortgage's crypto mortgage will be launching soon for home buyers in Texas, Florida, and Colorado, and will also be open to investors in most states across the U.S. for investment properties. Welcome to the future of mortgages. Visit moonmortgage.com today to register and learn more. Moon Mortgage Residential is registered with the NMLS under number 235334. Today's episode is brought to you by Gordon Law Group. If you've tried to do Bitcoin taxes yourself, you know how complicated it is. You can spend hours and hours going through your transactions and researching tax forms, and you're still not sure if it's right or if the IRS will come after you. Or maybe you're so intimidated by Bitcoin taxes that you don't even know where to start. Gordon Law Group can help. Ditch the spreadsheets and feel confident with a bulletproof Bitcoin tax return. They can help with IRS payment plans, and they also provide a full range of legal and accounting services for Bitcoin and digital asset startups. Get your taxes done right the first time with the original Bitcoin and digital asset tax pros. Go to GordonLawLTD.com/BTC. As a bonus, they'll send you the ultimate Bitcoin tax guide for free. That's GordonLawLTD.com/BTC.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of FedWatch. My name is Ansel Lindner, and on this show, we take a look at the wide macro environment and how Bitcoin fits into that. Today's topics are going to be debt ceiling, how that affects liquidity for risk assets, German recession, Chinese PMIs, and of course, take a look at the Bitcoin chart. I am joined, as always, by CK. CK, how are you doing today?
I am doing good, man. Happy to be here. Ansel, we need to get some stuff behind you and your background. You got the bull, put it front and center. Let's get bullish. A lot to talk about, a lot of macro to tease out, economic data from across the globe. Again, this is a macro show that not only talks about Bitcoin, that not only talks about what is happening with the dollar, but we talk about things that are happening across the globe, Europe, Asia, South, the global South, all of the above. Let's get into it, Ansel.
Yeah, and I personally have a little contrarian take to my analysis, and you're kind of the voice of reason from the Bitcoin side. So yeah, I love the dichotomy that we have here on the show. Everybody, like, share, subscribe, comment down below. You know, show us that you're enjoying the content here from Bitcoin Magazine and from FedWatch. Any other administrative plugs up front, CK?
Oh, man. I mean, yo, I have, of course, been enjoying the podcast. So I know Ansel, he puts out, you know, a daily show on Telegram. He posts some of that stuff on his podcast feed. That's what I end up listening to. So I've been really enjoying you just kind of like teasing out what's happening in macro. So I want to give you a shout out, Ansel. You know, of course, got to plug Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville. We have the presale going on right now. We recently crushed 1,000 people purchasing presale tickets. Presale is going on, I believe, through the middle of June. So get these tickets at the lowest price possible. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville is going to be July 25th through the 27th. It's going to be a lot of fun. Nashville has a ton of energy. I'm actually broadcasting from Nashville as we speak. And I mean, honestly, I think it's going to be the Bitcoin capital of America soon. I think the conference coming here is huge. The community that is being built around the Nash Bitcoiners group and the Bitcoin Park building and co-working space, I'm just so bullish. So Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville. And then someone in the chat here saying, how about Amsterdam too? Absolutely, I'm hyped about Amsterdam. Amsterdam, the pre-sale unfortunately already passed, but those tickets are generally very, very affordable tickets. That is going to be 12th and the 13th in Amsterdam this year. We are currently working on doing updates and having a lot more information to share about what we're building for Bitcoin Amsterdam. So really hyped to see plebs there. Alan, I see you on the chat. Can't wait to meet you in Amsterdam. And Amsterdam, like Nashville, has a ton of personality, has a ton of unique energy to offer. And I am just absolutely hyped to get over there again. It's going to be a blessing to be back in Europe. And that event, it was a ton of fun the first year around. I think it's going to be twice as big this year. So Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville, that is next year. Bitcoin Amsterdam 2023, October 12th through the 13th. I'll see you all there. That is enough shilling from me. Antle, let's talk macro, man. I mean, let's talk Bitcoin. We always start, as is tradition, we always start with the Bitcoin price. You want to jump into it, or do you want to talk a little bit more about Bitcoin markets?
Oh, no. Thanks for the plug. You guys can check out bitcoinandmarkets.com to stay up with all my stuff. So, okay. Yeah, let's go jump right into the Bitcoin chart here. This is the daily. It has the 50-day moving average in green and the 200-day moving average. It looked like we could maybe break out just, you know, earlier in the week on what day was that? Sunday night is when we had that big green candle, but we have been rejected from that. So we'll see where we come to rest. That dash line is 25,000-ish and, you know, right at that support, the previous high to act as support. So we'll see where this settles. But overall, like I've been saying on previous weeks, is I think sellers are exhausted. There's just no momentum behind, you know, a price drop at this point. And if there is any dip, I think it will be quickly bought up. CK, any thoughts on this daily chart?
I mean, Bitcoin's price makes you anxious these days. You know, I'm still seeing, you know, in this chart, I'm still seeing mostly higher highs, higher lows. You know, everyone who watches the show regularly knows I'm not a proper expert or analyst here. But, you know, the prolonged consolidation, a little, you know, maybe like sideways and down as you're like illustrating with that red line. You know, we'll see if, you know, we can bake through this 50-day moving average. You know, it's definitely, I think for me, emotionally, it's scary every time I kind of look at the price, just thinking through what is going to happen immediately into the future. It could really kind of go both ways. A lot of uncertainty. You know, long term, I don't care. I'm just stacking sats, and that's the most important. But as someone who's just kind of anticipating what's coming next in Bitcoin's price and what that means, you know, I feel like this is a weird lull. You know, there's kind of a void.
Yeah, great points. I was anticipating June 1st for a couple of reasons. One, because I am always wanting to see like a paycheck bump in the Bitcoin price. You know, when people get their paychecks and they do their DCA into Bitcoin, I'm always waiting to see that. And also, June 1st was when the Hong Kong Stock Exchange was supposed to start being able to trade Bitcoin. And so, but we haven't seen that, you know, be come out in the charts yet.
Perhaps so that's today, by the way.
It'll take a few days.
Today is June 1st. Yep.
Perhaps it'll take a couple days for that to be reflected in the charts. But any thoughts on the June Hong Kong thing, trading going on in Hong Kong now?
You know, you can get Bitcoin anywhere. I remember reading an article about this, and, you know, this seems like just the next ETF, just the next whatever. I guess it's a big deal. I don't know enough about the liquidity of that exchange or what it actually means, you know, in the market today. But, you know, probably bullish, could be bearish. It could be a area for manipulation. But generally speaking, I think on-ramps to Bitcoin are generally a good thing. My question is, can you withdraw? If not, probably shouldn't trade there. We'll see how many people actually trade there and what the features they offer are.
Yeah, all great points. I didn't even think about, well, it's manipulation, I think, will take a while to build up, but that's a good point because Chinese volume in the past has been a lot of wash trading volume. So we'll see if that comes back as they open up Hong Kong. Another aspect to this is just the ability to have Bitcoin businesses. So they're opening up like a licensing type thing, probably similar to like a New York BitLicense. So you can have Bitcoin companies in China now. So I think that's kind of interesting and could lead to some bullish momentum. But let's switch over to the weekly chart. That's the next one. And you'll see where that kind of red resistance zone is coming from that has held down the price. The 200-week moving average is kind of holding up the price, acting as support right now. And we are getting squeezed between those two very important levels on the chart. Which way will that pressure be relieved? CK, any looking at this chart, does this make you more bullish or more bearish?
I mean, I definitely think it's a more bullish chart. It shows a lot more of the higher highs and higher lows on this chart. Obviously, you can see that we are right up against support that we recently, you know, kind of bursted past, you know, the resistance there. But we haven't spent a lot of time, you know, like on this is the 200-week moving average. We haven't spent a lot of time on that. And honestly, like, I think if you really zoom out, that line is historically very strong support. So the fact that we're sitting on it, I don't know, it's scary. I just think that there's a lot of things that say this is a wildly uncertain time in Bitcoin's price. But again, I'm not an expert. I'm just a sat stacker, but these are my observations. My actions are I buy Bitcoin twice a week. And then sometimes when I just feel like it. So that is exactly on the dips and when I just feel like it. So,
yeah. Awesome. Well, Bitcoin is correlated with another asset class for the time being, not forever, but for the time being. And that's our next chart is the S&P 500, the US stock market. And you can see we have higher highs, higher lows. Everything looks bullish despite being the most hated rally in probably the history of the stock market. It is the most anticipated recession probably in history as well, yet stocks keep going higher. You can see today that the last candle on this chart today is back up above. It would be a new yearly high close if we close at these levels. And it, going all the way back to August of 2022 last year to see similar prices. I'll also add that this is not the behavior that you see from the stock market before a recession. We are off all-time highs. We have a golden cross. That's the 50 and the 200-day moving averages. And we have higher highs and higher lows. This is not the way that the stock market behaves before going into recession. So it looks bullish for the stock market. And that makes me like, if it's a 50-50 right now for you short-term on Bitcoin, look at the stock market, it looks much more bullish. So I would tip that to the bullish short-term prediction for the Bitcoin price. Any comments on that, CK? Am I just blowing smoke?
No, I mean, it's wild to look at the stock market like this. You know, we heard of the NVIDIA news last week. You know, obviously some stocks are doing really well, S&P 500, you know, kind of peaking back up. But I don't know, it feels like the energy is recession, even if the stock market is not showing that. Can you just dive back here, Ansel, and talk a little bit about what your thesis is about what we're seeing right now and what could just explain your contrarian takeover, maybe what people are hearing both in the mainstream as well as in the mainstream alternative narrative, because there's the mainstream alternative narrative, and then there's Ansel Lindner. So hit us with your contrast.
Yeah, I'm kind of the contrarian to the contrarian. So
yeah,
I'm way
actually,
out in left field.
Actually, though.
So my thesis here is that we are at the end of a large credit bubble. And so the normal times will be a low growth, low inflation environment as you just try to keep everything from popping. You know, they call this the everything bubble. It was the subprime mortgage bubble. Before that, it was the dot-com bubble. Now it's supposed to be the everything bubble, and everything is supposed to pop. And what happens to a bubble when it pops? It doesn't inflate. Okay, when a bubble pops, it deflates. So that's what they're trying to fight, is deflation. They're trying to keep the deflationary end of this grand 50-year cycle from deflating. And the only thing they can do is bailouts, you know, extend and pretend. And what that will manifest in the market is low growth and low inflation. So yeah, I see going from very high nominal growth after COVID because of all the stimulus and stuff. We had very high nominal growth. Going back from 10% nominal growth to zero is going to feel like a recession. And so I get that. I think it is kind of recessionary, but it's not going to be a textbook recession. We're just returning to the normal low growth, low inflation. So does that make sense, CK?
No, I think it makes sense. And I guess just to reflect back to the stock market.
Yeah.
What is your view on how the stock market behaves in that scenario that you just painted?
Yeah. So the theme would be similar to asset price inflation. I don't really like that term, but people understand what that term is, where certain asset classes are getting bids and going higher, stock market, real estate, bonds, things like that. But prices for everyday items aren't going up. It's your asset prices that are going higher. The reason why that is because in a credit-based system, which we have, and hopefully Bitcoin can remedy that in the future, but right now we're in a credit-based system, you have to have some expansion of credit. And then when you have low growth environment, the credit that is created is narrowly focused into those certain asset classes. So it is exactly like the Cantillon effect. The new credit is being created for homes. It's being created for stock buybacks. It's being created to buy risk-free securities from the US government. So that's where the new credit creation is happening. And that's why asset prices go higher. So if you look at Bitcoin's history, you know, after the great financial crisis, we had low growth, low inflation environment, yet Bitcoin surged. So if we go back into that environment, I think that's good for quote unquote risk assets like the S&P 500 and for Bitcoin.
Gotcha. No, I mean, I appreciate you explaining it. I know you explain it on the show a lot. My assumption is that there's always new people. So
yes,
that's
yes.
Why I ask you to give context. So is that you see your thesis confirmed here, especially in the immediate term with the way that the S&P is reacting despite, you know, all the feelings of recession and all of the narratives and talking points around recession.
Yeah, as we see growth collapse, we'll also see CPI collapse. And so real growth will go back to zero. And in that environment, where is everything going to be printed? It's going to be printed in a narrowly focused band into assets. That's why we have asset price inflation, and Bitcoin benefits from that as well. Gold will benefit from that. Everything. So I think my prediction back in 2022 for 2023 was the reverse of what we saw in 2022. We saw bonds selling off, we saw stocks selling off, we saw Bitcoin selling off. The reverse was going to happen this year. We're going to see higher stock market, higher Bitcoin, and higher bond prices, lower yields. And that's pretty much what has happened, even with the Fed raising interest, their Fed funds target over and over and over again at the fastest pace pretty much in history. So even with that, we still see higher prices for all of those things.
Ansel, should we jump into the debt ceiling? Obviously, this is not something that's 100% concluded, but it seems like all the rumors of is the government going to shut down, now there's light at the end of the tunnel. Why don't you talk about this?
Yeah, so it has passed the House and it goes on to the Senate to be signed and then to the president, of course. But it was a compromise bill. What they ended up doing was they took off all debt limit until 2025. They could spend as much as they want until 2025. However, the one limit that they included was on non-defense spending. So everything other than the military is going to be capped, but military spending is not going to be capped. And man, when I read that for the first time, when I saw that, I was like, holy cow, you better buy some Raytheon stock. You know, you better buy some of that stuff because that's just going to keep going up. But anyways, that's where we're at. They took the debt ceiling off. Now, the fallout from that is the Treasury is going to have to re-up their bank account. They have a bank account at the Federal Reserve. It's called the Treasury General Account, or TGA for short. And we do have a slide for that. Let's see. Yeah, that's the next one, Producer Chris. Thank you, sir. And you can see that it's all the way down almost to zero. If you go to the next one, I actually zoomed in on this part of the chart. So you can see it got really close to zero. That's the balance in the Treasury's bank account. And now that the debt ceiling has been put off, they're going to have to refill that bank account. People are talking that this is going to be a drain on the economy, because where is that money going to come from? People are going to buy treasuries. That money is going to go into the Treasury's bank account, but it's going to come out of the economy somewhere else. So there's going to be a Joe Consorti, which is where I got these charts from. Great follow on Twitter, by the way, with the Bitcoin Layer and Nick Bhatia. Joe Consorti said that this is going to have a crowding out effect. You know, you can't spend that money to buy risk assets. You're going to spend that money to buy treasuries, and then the bank account is going to go higher. The Treasury's bank account is going to go higher. So a lot of people are thinking that, yes, the debt ceiling has been, or the default, quote unquote default, of the US government has been avoided, which should be bullish, right? But at the same time, this means the Treasury is going to be draining liquidity out of the system and putting it back into their bank account. So that is kind of the back and forth we have going on now. I did take a few other notes here. One thing too is the TGA is held at the Fed, and so are bank reserves from banks. Now, all of these operations, selling treasuries, then putting that money into the TGA, that is not going to change the level in the Fed's balance sheet. So if the TGA goes up by $500 billion, that probably means that bank reserves have to go down by $500 billion. That will cause more bank problems, more small banks to fail, more of these bailouts and stuff like that. We'll have tighter borrowing, tighter lending standards. Demand for loans will probably go down. All of this adds together to, some people are saying that this could be like a 25 basis point hike or an extra hike from the Federal Reserve to, you know, their Fed funds target range. So coming up in a couple of weeks, we have the next FOMC meeting where they're going to decide whether they hike or not. It's about 50-50 right now, according to the market. And so we'll see if they pause. I think that all of this put together puts the Fed in a great position to pause. And I've said this in the past, that I think Powell wants to pause. You know, I think he wants his job to be done. A lot of people out there, Tom Luongo and others, friends of the show, they think that the Fed is just going to keep hiking and they want to destroy the economy and all this stuff. I don't think that. I think Powell is looking for an excuse to pause. And this whole thing with refilling of the TGA after the debt ceiling, this could give an effect of a rate hike and allow them to pause. I hope that makes sense. CK, any pushback or any comments that you have on this whole situation?
I mean, it's an interesting theory, right? And I appreciate you kind of explaining these dynamics, but I don't have anything intelligent really to add to it. I think, you know, time will tell, you know, if the Fed actually does pause. You know, Ansel has been saying pivot for a while. Yeah. And, you know, frankly, like if you were to say like they were raising it by, was at some point one basis point, you know, now that they're doing like a quarter of a basis point. So, you know, it sounds like, you know, they're starting to move. If they're like a massive ship in water, it takes time to like start, quote unquote, changing and pivoting.
Yeah.
You know, I watched, there's this runner, I forget her name, but she just broke the world record for most consecutive days running ultra marathons. And after breaking the record, she's been pretty much just like trying to like wean herself off of doing ultra marathons, you know, still running an insane amount. But I think that, you know, obviously anything that you've been doing for a long time, an institution that has, you know, been operating in a certain way, you know, they have to just doing a hard stop and shift is something that they probably want to avoid. So all that talking goes to say is that, you know, Ansel, I think like you've been kind of directly correct on this. And I'll be very interested to see in the coming months, you know, with the bank failures, with the dynamic with the debt ceiling and the Treasury, if you know, again, you call it right on point or you know, or if the Fed, you know, doesn't operate the way that you're forecasting here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying one way or the other if the Fed is going to pause. I think Powell wants to pause, though. So, but I do think that if it's kind of like a 50-50, a lot of people will say this restocking or refilling of the TGA is extremely bearish for stocks. Okay, well, you have to take that and be like, well, it's kind of bearish for stocks, but if the Fed pauses, that's bullish for stocks. So where do these forces net out in the end? Maybe it'll be a little bit slightly positive. Maybe it'll be slightly negative. So to answer that, you have to go back one layer in your thought process and go back to your thesis. And my thesis is saying stocks higher because we're going back to low growth, low inflation. That's kind of how I evaluate these things. If I can't come to a conclusion, you have to fall back to your basis. And that's my base case. So I hope that makes sense.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee. A city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.
Plebs, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, then you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's a free and a paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts Dylan LeClaire, Dr. Jeff Ross, and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com.
What's next? Should we jump over to China?
Yep, we got China up here coming up next. This is their PMIs came out, and that's the producer. Oh man, what's PMI stand for? The Purchasing Managers Index. So this is like they ask purchasing managers throughout the economy, are they seeing an increase or a decrease in business? Anything below 50 is a decrease. Anything above 50 is an increase. And I was going to read through it of this article that you're seeing. Let me read for the headline for podcast is the Hang Seng Index dipping into bear territory as China's PMI delivered a downside surprise. So the release of China's official purchasing managers index of the month of May has revealed another downside surprise, providing yet another validation for the more subdued growth picture in the world's second largest economy. The National Bureau of Statistics manufacturing PMI delivered a reading of 48.8 for May, which underperformed the consensus 49.4. This is a deeper contraction from a month ago and marked the second straight month of decline in the manufacturing sector. Non-manufacturing PMI disappointed as well, reflecting some tapering in growth momentum from the initial reopening boost at the start of the year. The reading came in at 54.5, underperforming the consensus 55.2 forecast. And I have a chart on the next slide. This is the dark blue here is the manufacturing PMI. And when you think of the Chinese economy, you think of manufacturing, right? You think of an export-led economic model. And you can see that's back in decline and moving the other way. So I don't think this looks very good. I really don't care too much about the red line because that can be affected by stimulus payments. It can be affected by government-directed infrastructure projects. And so really, I'm looking at this manufacturing PMI. If you go to the next slide, this is iron ore futures. And of course, if China is reopening and it's just a temporary slowdown or something like that, you would see iron ore futures being more resilient and staying up. But we can see over the last couple months here, they continue to slide lower. And the next slide is copper, another important manufacturing type metal, and it continues to sell off as well. Just a very weak performance out of the Chinese government. or Chinese economy. And I will say too that these numbers probably are a little bit rosier than the real picture. For years, people have estimated that the GDP of China has been overestimated by a third or even half. And so these PMI numbers, you got to take them with a little bit of a grain of salt. And I think that that means that the Chinese economy could be in much worse shape. Now that does roll over to our next story, which is Germany. But CK, do you have any comments on the China story here?
Not a ton of comments other than, you know, there was a lot of macro analysts that were calling for a, and I think, Chris, we can drop the slides, but there's a lot of macro analysts that were calling for a red hot China. It wasn't that long ago. This was like 3 or 4 months ago that they're talking about this is going to ignite the world economy. China is going to open up in a blaze. And we were fading that on the show. You know, obviously that's part of Ansel's thesis, but the show in general, our thesis is that centrally planned economies don't work as well as open economies. And we're bearish on Chinese activity and Chinese central planning. So I think that that informed why we faded that. And here we are, it shows as though it is a nothing burger. And we'll see is if China, you know, can return to what it was in the early 2000s and what it was prior to the COVID lockdowns.
Yeah. And we're also fading not only central planning, but we're fading the demographic problem over there in China, as well as the debt problem. I shared a chart with my Telegram showing corporate debt in China for the last 20 years. And the U.S. is, it's compared to the U.S. and the U.S. is kind of going nice and steady upward. And here comes China just out of nowhere going up and doubling almost the U.S. corporate debt. Now, somebody on my server made a great comment. He's like, yeah, but let's, what about per capita? Because there's so many more people in China, there this less per capita debt. And so that was an interesting comment. So I went through and I normalized for population and for income, because yes, they have a lot more people, but they also have a lot lower income. And when you do that, it comes out to twice as much debt per person per income in China versus the United States. So that tells you what a bad debt problem they have. And it came out of nowhere. You know, the last 20 years was just zero to 100 for their debt problem. And that is not a sustainable model, especially when you're driven off manufacturing. Like I told you about the PMI, that's their manufacturing model or the economic model. And now we're going through deglobalization. So all of these things put together, yeah, has made me very bearish on China. And those other analysts, they don't know what they're talking about.
So deglobalization is happening, not necessarily de-dollarization. What do you have to say to that statement, Ansel?
Oh, man. Did you read my most recent piece on coinmarkets.com?
I wish I did, but let's just pretend I did. Hit us with the knowledge, though.
Okay. So yeah, the stuff we hear all the time is de-dollarization is happening because of a couple reasons. You know, either the dollar's inflating, so they want to get away from the dollar, or there is the weaponization of the dollar, so all the sanctions that the U.S. uses, or because just the general U.S. empire, they want to get away from U.S. hegemony. Anyway, the piece that I've been working on and the first half that I published already is debunking all of those things. I think that the deglobalization is happening for the reasons I outlined. Demographics, there is the U.S. is kind of pulling itself away from the world, and people don't want the U.S. to be involved in the policing of the world. So what does that do? Well, the international trust breaks down. You have the international institutions breaking down, and the dollar system that it's all predicated on stops performing well, stops expanding credit. It starts actually contracting credit. So we get a deflationary pressure in the global economy. So all of these people, they're de-dollarizing, but they're de-dollarizing because it's involuntary de-dollarization versus voluntary de-dollarization. So the order of operation is not de-dollarization leads to deglobalization. It is deglobalization leads to de-dollarization, and that will in turn lead to deflation. So that's my thesis on that one.
And Bitcoin.
And Bitcoin, yes. And the one I'm working on, the second part of this series is working on How does Bitcoin fit into that? And I've talked about that a lot. People search for monetary replacement in a monetary shortage. Jeff Schneider has talked about this a lot, that in a monetary or a dollar shortage, people look for alternatives, right? And so that's why you hear all this stuff about the yuan being used in bilateral trade, why the BRICS currency, they're trying to make a BRICS currency. You hear all these other alternatives. And of course, gold is getting a bid and Bitcoin is getting a bid. So all of this stuff adds up. A deflationary grind is kind of what I call it. And that will lead to searching for alternatives, which that is Bitcoin. So, hey, man, I just summed up my whole thesis on there.
Wow, that's money. Hey, we're going to have to clip that one, Chris. Share, make it shareable for YouTube. The world needs to know exactly what's going to go down, how Bitcoin is going to happen. Bitcoin's going to happen, but it's important, you know, maybe it's important, maybe it's not, to be right about why it will happen. Being directionally correct is the best that you can do.
Yeah.
Ansel, I know that we're kind of going off this little tangent. Let's get back to the agenda. We need to talk Europe. We need to talk Germany. What is up with Germany's financials?
Okay, well, Germany is very closely linked to the Chinese economy. You know, they're both export driven, but, you know, Germany imports a lot from China, but they also export a lot of heavy machinery to China. Their economies are very intertwined. So if China's having problems, Germany should be having problems. And lo and behold, what do we see here? Germany has entered recession. So the headline here for podcast listeners is Germany falls into recession as consumers in Europe's biggest economy spend less. And I'll just read a little bit here out of this. Germany has slipped into recession as last year's energy price shock takes its toll on consumer spending. And here on the show, we talked about that the whole time, that the sanctions pushing energy prices up was going to massively hurt the European economy. All right, continuing. Output in Europe's largest economy dropped 0.3% in the first 3 months of the year. So that is their real GDP was negative 0.3%, following a negative 0.5% contraction at the end of 2022, so fourth quarter of 2022. Official data showed Thursday. The Federal Statistics Office downgraded its previous estimate of zero growth in GDP compared with the previous quarter. A recession is defined as two consecutive quarters of declining output. So they have a more streamlined version, official definition of what a recession is. Let's continue here. The persistence of high price increases continued to be a burden on the German economy at the start of the year, the office said. This was particularly reflected in the household final consumption expenditure, which was down 1.2% in the first quarter. So overall, the German economy is sliding, and I have one more slide, and that is Germany has the worst outlook of the G7. And this is a very stark slide here. The US sitting at the bottom with the best forecast, Canada, Japan, Italy, France, UK, and then Germany is the only one negative on here for their 2023 year GDP is supposed to be negative. That is massively important here when we look at seeing what comes next in this kind of slow motion crisis that we're in. CK, any thoughts on this story?
I mean, it's wild to see Germany struggle so much, especially when you're hearing how bad things are in the UK and how bad things are in Italy and how bad things are in Canada and how bad things are in the US. And, you know, you see Germany just, you know, completely underperforming the rest of the G7 counterparts. I mean, we've been talking, you know, talking about fading China. We've been fading Europe for a long time. We've been saying that things are not aligned there, that things cannot continue. And, you know, we've been seeing the kind of like globalist perspective really being populated from Europe as well as the CBDC perspective. They kind of go hand in hand. So, you know, I would say that again, once again, this is confirmation that the thesis of the show is directly correct. And it's wild to see Germany performing so poorly. It's scary because, you know, the world order is really hinged on a lot of these kind of core Western nations continuing. And when things start to fall apart, you know, wild stuff can happen.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting that the two economies that we highlighted today with China and Germany are very heavily dependent on globalization. They're very heavily dependent on export. Their economic models are export driven, and they are seeing the worst effects, at least right now. We'll see what the next step is, but the first step in this slow motion crisis is a devolution of the export led model. So CK, go ahead. Do you have anything else to add, or that's all I have for new content for today? We could.
I mean, the wild thing is it, to me, it is wild how technology seems to emerge at the perfect time. So, you know, we're starting to see deglobalization that is leading to de-dollarization because the dollar system's breaking down, and that coincides with the invention of internet sound money, which is Bitcoin. And a platform in which to build society, rebuild society off of a better system. We also are seeing with deglobalization, this export model, kind of export mixed with debasement, has kind of been like a 1-2 punch. That is now becoming relevant, and that is coinciding with the emergence of automation and artificial intelligence language models, which can, you know, it's going to change the kind of nature of production, both physical and intellectual goods. And, you know, we are seeing these paradigm shifts happen simultaneously. It's absolutely wild to watch. But I think, you know, there's a Chinese proverb, speaking of China, says live in interesting times. And that's absolutely where we are today, is we are living in interesting times. We are living on the convergence of different technological change that is going to completely rewrite and change our incentives. So, you know, again, it's going to be difficult to navigate. We can't use our old heuristics to do so. But at the same time, there's a lot of opportunity that comes with moving from one paradigm to the next. So, you know, obviously with the good comes the bad, with the bad comes the good. But I see that this, you know, Bitcoin and this new digital age, this is an opportunity. And that's what gets me excited every single day. And, you know, that's what we try to do on the show, is try to, you know, help everyone who's watching this space and watching these evolutions happen, kind of get more information and get a more global and more accurate perspective, directionally correct perspective, if you will. And so that's my close. I can show the conference again. I can show Bitcoin Magazine, but what's your last word?
Yeah, I just thought that was, I mean, beautiful. I think that Bitcoin can make you kind of spiritual in a way, because like you say, right as de-dollarization is happening, Bitcoin is here. Digital scarcity was solved, and distributed consensus was solved right when it was needed. It's a beautiful thing. But also, it makes me think of 1971 when we went off the gold standard, and that was also right when the internet was established. And gold is kind of the analog of Bitcoin, and the internet started and gold went away pretty much the same year, within a couple months. So just like how Bitcoin was invented right when we need it, the internet and gold, demonetization of gold, happened about the same time. So yeah, it's funny how things work out, and you kind of have to look at this in a kind of a religious way. And maybe as we go forward, I know this has been a thing for a long time about maybe Satoshi is going to be a religious figure in the future, but man, the way things work out like this, it's almost too good to be true. And so yeah, it's kind of beautiful.
I mean, I think the universe it just works in mysterious ways, and that's why you have to stay humble. You know, before I leave, I'd be remiss if I didn't give our man Julian Assange on the cover of the newest Bitcoin magazine, the Gatekeeper issue, a shout out. This thing is, gosh, it's so freaking beautiful. I absolutely love this thing. And we also have Julian Assange as the Joker card, made by Proof of Paint, an incredible artist in the Bitcoin space. Really, really love this one. Here, Chris, let's go full screen real quick on this beautiful Julian Assange. But just an incredible magazine, just high quality stuff. Actually, one of my favorite pages here, our man Rational Root, he has this amazing hash calculator, as well as, let me flip to the other page, this awesome, gosh, this is harder than it looks, this awesome, you know, hash price kind of widget that you can build, and it has like a punch out, like, again, just a beautiful card stock. Really, really love how this magazine turned out, and it's a piece of Bitcoin history. So get your copy, get your subscription. You know, if you want to see what last quarter's, it was the broke issue with Sam Bankman fraud on the cover. And now we have Julian Assange, and you know, the team never rests. We're about to ship another one. So get your subscription today, get this beautiful piece of Bitcoin history. And hey, come to Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville, 14 months away. There's a long time, but get the best prices on tickets today. And, you know, consider coming to Europe in October. I'm going to be personally there at Bitcoin Amsterdam, October 12th through the 13th. Can't wait for you all to be there. Everyone can save on all of these things when you use promo code BMLIVE at our store as well. And if you pay with Bitcoin, you get an extra bonus as well. Of course, we accept Bitcoin. You got to go through the end of the checkout. That's enough shilling. We'll be back here next week. I will be on the show, but after that, I will be taking a break for 2 weeks, and we'll have the man, the myth, the legend, Nolan on the show to help Ansel break down macro every single week for y'all.
Can't wait for that. Yeah, and guys, check me at bitcoinandmarkets.com, and the Telegram that I'm on daily, all day long, is t.me/bitcoinandmarkets. Take it away, Chris.
Peace.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee. A city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.
Plebs, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, then you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's a free and a paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts Dylan LeClaire, Dr. Jeff Ross, and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com.